Barnard.
And I'm Matt Edwards.
What's happening North Idaho?
First, as always, is our small business shout out today, Inland Cafe and Tea on Government Way in Coeur d'Alene, just across from the Kootenai County Fairgrounds. And this is a place that I'd love to take my wife to because I think she'd dig it.
It's so cute. It's adorable.
You've been there?
Oh, yeah, I've been there. You get to pick out your own little teacup to use with their giant list of teas from all over the place.
Oh, wow.
And then each person gets their own teapot to use, and you just feel so fancy. You can have some high tea in there, get some little sandwiches.
Oh, they have like finger sandwiches?
Finger foods,
and finger sandwiches.
Amazing salads, soups, sandwiches.
Oh.
Like, and they make it from scratch.
Fantastic.
So it's really good food.
Okay, so meet me down there, Inland Cafe and Tea on Government Way in Coeur d'Alene across from the Kootenai County Fairgrounds. Aaron, we have a special treat today. You headed out, you were out and about, or maybe you were just here in the studio. But
I'm all over the place.
Yeah, but who did you have a chance to talk to? What's going on today?
Oh, man. So actually, Joe Alfieri stopped by to chat a little bit with me since you were out. I took over, held down the fort here, and we talked about his campaign. He's running for District 4 Idaho State Representative, and we talked about his passions and what he'll be focusing on if he is elected in November. And we kind of get a little deep in the topics, like taxes and election integrity. Like, it's not surface level, that's for sure, because we're all familiar with that part. So I just wanted to hear the next level down and what he's interested in. So I have some high hopes for this district in November and for next legislative session. And I hope that you do too.
Without further ado, the interview with Joe Alfieri.
Well, Joe Alfieri, thanks for being here with me today.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to see you again. Thank you. So excited to see you. It's been a couple of weeks, actually, since we've seen each other. I think the Women in Red event.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which was a wonderful event.
I had a great time.
Yes.
Yeah. You were there not only because, you know, all of our political friends are there, I guess, but you're there because you're running a campaign right now.
Mm-hmm.
You are running for, why don't you tell? I don't need to tell. Why don't you tell us what you're running for?
Well, I'm running for the Idaho House of Representatives for seat 4A, which is Coeur d'Alene.
Nice.
I won the primary in May. I beat the incumbent, Jim Addis.
Wow.
Who was in his, I guess he was vying for his third term. He'd been there for a couple of terms.
It seemed like he was there for longer.
It seemed longer.
Maybe that was just me.
The pain. But, but you know, Jim was a decent guy, but I didn't think he was conservative enough. I didn't think he represented the people well enough in that respect.
So you decided to step up and run. Thank you.
I decided to go for it. You know, I'd run earlier, the previous year, I'd run for mayor of Coeur d'Alene.
Mm-hmm.
And in my first effort, I thought we did a pretty decent job. We actually came close, and I think myself and the candidates for city council, I think we put a scare into the establishment.
I think so. They spent some pretty hefty dimes to run their campaigns.
We were close. You know, Elaine Price ran for one of the council seats, and she was 49 votes away from winning, and Roger came close, and J.D. did well, as J.D. Claridge did well also. So I think we put them on notice that they're not doing a good job of representing the district, representing the city.
Yeah. What I find funny is that all of you, Elaine, J.D., Roger, you all ran for city council and lost, you ran for mayor, but city level mm-hmm. and lost. And then you and Elaine stepped up mm-hmm. and ran for legislature. And correct me if I'm wrong, but the city council has to work with the representatives in the legislature to try to get laws changed to help with their cities.
That's true.
So you and Elaine both won your primaries. Now you're running for general. And do you have an opponent?
I do have an opponent. I do have a Democrat opponent. Obviously, it's not a guarantee that I'm going to win. I'm very hopeful that we're going to win. And I think that the numbers favor my election because we're a heavily conservative Republican district. We have, I think the registration for the Republicans is 60+%. Democrats is 20% or so. And then there's the undecided in the middle, or the unaffiliated, I should say. So I'm confident of the election, but certainly you don't take anything for granted.
Yeah, definitely.
So I'm still out talking to people. We've got signs coming to distribute, and I've got my literature at the printer right now. Actually sent it over this morning, my records. So I'll be working real hard for the next month.
Good.
To make sure it happens.
Good. All right. So hopefully if you win, those city council people that beat you for those seats will now have to work with you at the legislative level.
Right. And yeah, is there a...
I know. I'm like, no,
you find
love
that
the
ironic?
Irony.
You find that ironic? Okay.
that's it. But you seem to be pretty mellow. You don't think about the past like that. You tend to just move forward.
Exactly. And it will be my job to represent the entire city. I'm not, although I'm a conservative Republican, I'm not elected to represent only the conservative Republicans. I want to hear from everybody. And I have already begun to talk to the members of the council and the mayor. I've sat down and had conversations with them because I want to know what concerns they have and what we can do, if anything, in the legislature to help the city. My goal is to help the city. You know, my goal is not to glorify Joe Alfieri and pass bills on my name. I want to know what the city needs and what we can do. What we can do that is the responsibility of the government to do, mm-hmm. to help. Obviously, we're not going to be spending all kinds of dollars just because we can give the money away. We want to do what's right.
And helping the city also means working with Kootenai Health.
Yes.
Right? I saw just the other day a letter that came out from you and some other candidates who will either be a shoo-in because they don't have opponents or in the same boat as you, just have a Democratic candidate running against him. But you and a slew of other candidates signed a letter to Kootenai Health, or was it about Kootenai Health?
It was to the board of directors of Kootenai Health. It was myself and I guess 11 others who are either incoming legislators such as myself, Elaine Bentaves, Jordan Redmond, or those that are currently in office and will be reelected, like Vito Barbieri and Ron Mendive. And Heather Scott led the effort, actually, in putting this together. But our concern with Kootenai Health is it's a difficult one, because what happened last year is the legislature passed a bill unanimously which allows a community hospital such as Kootenai Health to transform itself into a 501c3 owned corporation, nonprofit. And it appears that Kootenai Health is headed in that direction. Now, the concern that we have is that the hospital has been, we think, mismanaged over the last 2 years, partly because of the pandemic and partly for other reasons, and we can get into that later. But they've been mismanaged, which decreases the value of the hospital if the hospital is going to be sold. And there is a belief that the hospital is going to be up for sale, and that this transition into a 501c3 is one step into selling the hospital off to a larger corporation. Which removes it from the community. It removes the asset that we have built, that taxpayers have paid for over the last 30 plus years, to create that hospital. And if it's removed from the control of the community, we have we're losing that asset, and we will not have direct say into what happens in that hospital. So, this is a long answer, and
no,
I apologize
that's
for
totally
that.
Fine. I'm fascinated.
While I am absolutely someone who believes that the free market best serves the market and whatever that market may be, I still think in this case we've paid for the hospital. We should have the control of the hospital.
Well, yeah, I mean, we still have an urban renewal district in place. you know, people are paying their tax dollars towards it.
Yeah.
And so that'll be interesting if they go nonprofit.
Sure. It's taken a good deal of property off the tax rolls.
Yeah.
So that impacts the rest of and impacts the city, actually, because everything that's part of it is in the city. But that hospital was designed to serve the five northern counties,
mm-hmm.
Although it's based here in Coeur d'Alene. It's designed to serve five northern counties, and that's why we had all 12 legislators sign it. Or incoming legislators.
Yeah.
It's a major concern. You know, we think the hospital is just, it's not in good shape. They've made some moves that I think amount to mismanagement over the last couple of years. And I think we need an accounting of it. We at least need to hear from the board of directors, or the board of trustees rather, what they're doing, why they made certain decisions, and is there a solution to some of the problems that they've created, other than their effort to become a 501c3.
So are you saying people in the community that you've spoken with are concerned that the hospital has deliberately mismanaged its funds to make itself lower? A lower profit?
Obviously, that's a supposition.
Yeah.
I don't want to ascribe evil intent to people.
Right.
But I think we need to look at it.
Yeah,
It is suspicious. Again, I'd like to believe that people do what they believe is the right thing, and maybe they've accidentally made some missteps. So I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, but I really want them to come to the table and tell us why certain things were done. For example, they had a contract with a company, I believe it was called Western Medical. And that they staffed the emergency room, and it was 30 or so people, 30, 35 doctors and nurses. And they terminated that contract, and those people collectively had 200 to 300 years of experience. And
well, hadn't that company been in place for years?
It had been, yes. They served the hospital for I don't know how many years, but
it was decades. Almost.
Yes, it was several decades. Yeah. So you know, they had this tremendous experience. And I don't think you can replace that very easily. And certainly if I go to my doctor, I'm confident that my doctor knows my history because he's been serving me for years, mm-hmm. right? Well, now you walk into an emergency room and you have a traveling doctor and nurse who don't have the investment in the community. And they're not dialed in. Again, not ascribing evil intent to them. But they're on the road in 30 days.
Yeah.
They're off to something else.
Just sad.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is.
What's going to be your focus if and when you get down to Boise? Like, do you have, you know, topics that you're interested in
yes.
in pursuing?
Ooh. Many.
Oh, okay. What are they?
How long do we have?
as long as you want.
Oh, my gosh. I've got several things on the agenda, and more keep coming up as I learn more about the process. But the first one, of course, is election integrity. That's a major focus of mine, and it has been for several years. Actually, it's been for decades. Realistically, I remember going to, and this displays my age, but what the heck, we're friends. I remember going to bed in 1960, I guess it was November 1960, and thinking Richard Nixon was our next president. And I woke up the next morning and it was John F. Kennedy.
Wow.
And later on, of course, I learned the story behind it, the probable steal in Chicago and Texas.
Oh my gosh.
That turned that election, and that Nixon knew what happened. But he decided it was best for the country not to contest it, even though they had enough evidence, I think, to do it. So I'm not going to say that we have that issue here in Kootenai County, but there are issues in Idaho regarding election integrity that we need to address. So that will be a major focus. Absentee ballots.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, we have a problem with absentee ballots. The country has a problem with absentee ballots. It's obviously been a push by the left to get people to vote absentee. The first objection that I have to that is, well, the first objection is obviously it's open for fraud. But the basis of it is that the basis to my objection to absentee ballots is that we're cheapening the election process. The election process is close to sacred. It is our God-given right to choose the people who will govern us. This is not shopping at Amazon. It should not be a convenience to be able to vote. It should be a duty to vote. And people should honor that. And part of that should be going to the polls and casting your ballot and having it counted by a human being and tallied so that a winner is declared. This mail-in stuff, as though we're, you know, responding with postcards to an offer for the latest, latest discount on seltzer water or wherever it may be. We've got to take the election process and make it more special, and that's part of the absentee. There are reasons for absentee ballots. I think there are legitimate reasons. Certainly, if you're infirm, you can't get out to vote. Absolutely, you should have an absentee ballot. If you are in the military or another reason why you're out of state for a very good reason, absentee ballots are legitimate. But as a convenience, no, it's got to go away. You must fix that.
So are you saying that absentee ballots, do you want to change the statute so that absentee ballots are only available for the infirm and the military?
The infirm and military and others that have that type of inability to vote. So that would include, for example, a diplomatic mission, perhaps a missionary who's, you know, they're in Guyana, whatever it may be. They're out of the country for a very legitimate reason, or they're out of the state for a very legitimate reason and can't vote. That's fine. I mean, that's the way absentees have always been. But to do it just because I'm too lazy to, you know, to drag my tuchus down isn't a good word.
Yeah.
To drag my tuchus down to the polling station. Nah, that's not right. Sorry. Yeah.
So my concern with absentees is that it comes from an outside of state company.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like you probably know more than I do. So the Secretary of State sends this outside company a list of people who have requested absentees. And then that company will just mail them out and to those particular people. But who, if we're talking about conspiracies or just questions in general, like there's a lot that can happen between the Secretary of State's office and this outside company and the mail and these people getting their ballots. It's weird that it goes outside the state just to come back inside the state. And there's a lot of areas of gray for corruption.
Mm-hmm.
If it were to happen, is that the only thing that you're looking at? Just the absentee ballots, or is there more to the potential corruption of election integrity altogether?
Well, it certainly opens the door to corruption. There's no question about that. It certainly does, because if we don't check who is on the absentee ballot list, we have the potential for people to fill out ballots and submit them for voting. Now, let me give you an example. I've been working with a group on working on the absentee ballots here in Kootenai County, and we've done some canvassing, we've knocked on some doors, and we have checked numbers against the official list, which is supplied by the county.
Mm-hmm.
And we have found, this is not yet a firm number, but this is where we're at the moment. We have found that there on the doors that we've knocked on, and this is several hundred, we have found issues with almost 50%.
Of absentee ballots?
Absentee ballots, almost 50%. So those issues range from everything from, well, that person moved 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago, and they're still getting an absentee ballot. And absentee ballots are supposed to be renewed every year.
Right.
But they're still getting absentee ballots. To 5 or 6 people living in a house, and there's only one person there. So those are some of the things we're seeing.
Wow.
Right. So now we don't have final numbers, and we may have made mistakes and mm-hmm. things of that nature. So I'm going to put that caveat on it. But the initial data is not good. And this is what we've been told is happening across the country. We've heard this from experts like Dr. Frank. It's something we need to address. That's a problem we need to address. I'm not, again, We're not saying that we have a problem with our elections office. Our county clerks, fantastic. We have a really good group in there, but there are issues that are beyond their control. I'll give you another example. Can I give you another example?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. We do what's called, every candidate does what's called an absentee ballot chase. Mm-hmm. And what that is we are mailing to people that have requested absentee ballots. And the way that happens is that the county elections office supplies candidates on their request a list of people that have requested ballots. So before the primary this year, I got my first list from the county. And there was 700 plus names on that list, and I took that list I sent that list to my printer to do their postcard mailing, and the printer replied to me, there are 57 names on this list that fail the NCOA database list. The NCOA is the National Change of Address database, and that's from the post office, the U.S. post office. So 57 of those names, those people had moved.
Really?
Were not qualified to receive an absentee ballot, and yet they were on the absentee ballot list.
So when it says they fail this list, what does that mean?
It meant that they checked the name against the address, and it showed that that person had moved.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, now was the clerk's office behind in doing the change? Possibly, but that was 8% or so
mm-hmm.
of that first list. That's 8%. That's usually your margin of victory. If you run a really good campaign and you win by 8%, you're patting yourself on the back. But can you imagine that 8% of the list failed, was invalid? So
that's
what happens
crazy.
To those?
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking about that process. So you can move, fill out a change of address form at the post office,
right.
But not do it with the DMV or voter registration or anything like that. And so I guess technically that would be a failure on that list, right?
Sure, right, right.
Okay.
Right, right.
So my family's in the middle of flux right now. And so we still live at our firehouse most of the time. It's under construction right now, so we're temporarily somewhere else. So, but we still get all of our mail to that address. So if we did a change of mailing address at the post office, then that chase list, that your absentee chase list, could say that I'm a failure on that list, right?
Right.
My address doesn't match up because I have a change of mailing address at the post office.
Right. But you'd still get the absentee ballot.
But would I get it at my firehouse?
You'd get it at the firehouse.
Because it's
but
what
you're not,
the voter registration
you're not qualified
is.
To vote in that district.
Interesting.
Right?
Wow. That is so crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
So those are the failures that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Man. And then how is that reconciled? Does the clerk's office have to go through basically any change of mailing address from the post office or... Is it there in their wheelhouse? Is it something that they should be doing?
Well, I think there's. I think the clerk's office is supposed to do it, and I think the Secretary of State's office is also supposed to clean the list every year.
Clean the list every year. So.
And the state, I think the state participates. I think in the ERIC program, and I don't remember what the acronym stands for, but it's a program that compares state to state registrations. And is supposed to reconcile that.
Didn't some states just have to remove that out of use because they found that it was super corrupted?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Just making sure I was remembering that.
Yes.
Correct. All right. Good.
Yes. So that's one of the issues with our voting process. Another issue that just came to light in our voting process, and this is a little scary, is that the Los Angeles County has just indicted the CEO of a company that manages the software that is designed to manage the personnel of poll workers, managing poll workers and things of that nature.
Wow.
They have found that person, the charge anyway, is that that person is has been selling the data of those people, has been selling their Social Security numbers and things of that nature. And this goes apparently across the entire country because I guess the software is used pretty universally. I don't know. We're still looking at it. I don't know if that software is used here in Kootenai County in Coeur d'Alene, But we want to look at that as well. But there are so many potential areas of corruption when you put everything on a computer. And you know, I love computers. I'm a dinosaur in the fact that I'm actually in the museum, literally in the Smithsonian, about having started a computer store back in the day. And I love them, but it is too easy to hack them and to really do something very evil. And I think that's what's happening. So we have to be on guard against that.
Gotcha. Well, I've been at the clerk's office while they have been opening ballots and counting ballots.
Yes.
And when they first touch the ballot, when it comes in, after being filled out, I have not seen – everything that they have done has been above the board, across the way. Like, everything has been done. But I've been there. They have used machines for counting. I guess for counting, tallying. They swear that nothing is connected to the internet. And I'm just going to take that as their word because I have no way of checking myself. Mm-hmm. But I forgot where I was going with this. So the clerk's office is good. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But who's to say the technology or anything coming into the office before them that they have no control over? I don't know. The clerk's office is great, but before then, I'm worried about our elections. Not Kootenai County's, at least not until they come to the office. There was a question in there somewhere, but now I got worried about our clerk's team, which is amazing.
No, and I think we're in agreement on that. I don't think there's an issue at the clerk's office. I don't think that's it. I think the issue is beyond that. I think the issue is in the software. We don't know what's in the software. The software is not open source.
Yeah.
So we don't know if the tally that starts at 1,163 voters and divided among three candidates, and this is the way the voting went, we don't know if that final tally is exactly the same as the way the votes came in. We don't know that because we're not checking those votes, paper votes, and we do vote on paper, although we tally electronically. We vote on paper. We don't know if that tally electronically matches the paper tally. We don't know that for a fact.
Okay, that I remember my question now about that, actually, because I have been in the office when they have done a recount, and we have gone through 200 ballots individually, one by one, and gone through, okay, this person voted this way, this next person voted this way, and tallied them up, and they were spot on with what the machine counter had said.
Okay,
so I've been at the office in the primary, we were there until 5:30 in the morning, and that was just by tallying with the machines, multiple machines going. How would hand counting be possible when even using machines takes until 5:30 in the morning?
Well, I have a question then. 200 out of how many?
Oh, gosh. Votes? 8,000 or something.
Okay, so
like
what's
that?
Is there a trigger number? Do we know? Do we know that the software changes its method of operation after 200 or 500 or 600? Or is it consistent all the way through? We don't know that. We don't know that for a fact. Now, as to how is it possible to count, it's done all around the world. It's done in every other country except the United States. It's hand counted. And we did it for decades, more than decades, centuries. We did it for 200 years before we started going electronic. So what's to prevent us from doing it now? So why not tally at the precinct, count the votes at the precincts, take it back, and I'm talking about the county here because, you know, it's controlled by the county, and then we take it back to the county office, and you can do a machine count, and then you can do physical hand count after that, and see that all three of them compare. What's wrong with that?
Okay, I get it.
It's very easy to do. Do we need more people? Probably. Can we get them? Why not? We've done it before. We did it for hundreds of years.
So if we get more people,
if the French can do it, we can do it. Sorry for anyone out there that has French ancestry, but.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. Well, the county is already strapped for cash, right? There's always fights back and forth about how much money they have compared to what they can legally ask for and all that good stuff. So would we just have to change state law to be able to allow an added percentage for the counties to be able to ask for? Or what's your solution to that?
I don't know.
Okay.
We're going to have to look at that. We're just going to have to dig into it and see what the details are.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's a solution. The fact that there isn't a solution present doesn't mean that we shouldn't go, that we shouldn't try to do it, because what's working, what's happening now is not secure.
Very true.
So we have to fix it.
Our Savior innocence, they are trying to remove. I am here at your defense, and I will always fight for you. Yes, I will always fight for you. I will stand here in the way, and I will not give up on you. I will shield you from the pain.
Okay, well, so we know your thoughts on election integrity, which are fantastic. I wholeheartedly agree that we should, you know, make those about as secure as possible. Mm. What else are you focused on down in Boise, or going to be focused on?
Taxes are a concern of mine. I think we are overtaxed, and I think the fact that we had a $2 billion surplus in the state indicates that we're collecting too much money. Because, you know, if I were a contractor and you wanted to get a deck done, and I came out and I bid your deck at $25,000, and it cost me $11,000 to build that deck, it cost $11,000 to build that deck, profit included, should I not refund that $14,000 to you? Yeah, it would be the right thing to do. And I think that's where we are. We're collecting too much money, so we need to look at reducing the taxes. Now, which taxes do we reduce? The first one that bothers me, because I believe it's immoral, is the grocery tax. I think it's absolutely wrong to tax food. I just think we've got to get away with that, and that, or get away from that. And that, you know, that $200 or $300 a year that comes back in your tax return, that doesn't make it good, because all we're doing then is we are effectively lending the money to the state for no interest.
I think,
and I'm not in the banking industry, so you know, that's probably not the right way to do it.
Well, I think in 24 we get $75.
You get, oh, I know. Yeah. Well, don't spend it all in one. Well, you could spend it all in one place buying gas.
Buying gas, but, yep.
Which is another thing.
Or groceries
and,
at this
or
point.
Our gas tax is too high as well. We are among the highest in gas tax.
Really? So a lot of people probably don't know that the state taxes gas too.
Uh-huh.
So
right.
The price that we pay at the gas pump isn't just the gas station going, you're going to pay me this amount because that's what I want to charge.
No. Well, this is what bothers me about taxes in general, and about the gas tax in particular. Who makes the most money on gas?
I have no idea.
The state.
Really?
The state makes more money than the retailer.
I
hear different numbers, but I understand that the retailer makes about a dime a gallon.
Holy cow.
We're getting 38 cents. In the state.
Where is all that money going?
Where is all the money going?
Yeah.
There are things that need to be done. That's why we have a government, because there are things that only the state can do that individuals can't do. Police and fire and roads and forestry and, you know, things of that nature. So it's legitimate to tax. The question is, what should that tax rate be, and how do we collect that tax? So I, you know, that's something I want to work on. I want to work on grocery tax. I want to work on the sales tax, income tax. We have to readjust the tax levels, and there are at least three different areas in which we collect taxes, and we just need to look at it overall and come up with something better than we're doing, because we can't continue to tax everything that we do. It's just wrong. I'm worried about property taxes.
Oh yeah,
property taxes concern me, because we're with the increase in assessed values that we're seeing across the state, although I understand things have begun to slide a little bit in the property market, but with an increase in the assessed values, taxes will go up, and we will begin to see people lose their homes because they can't pay their tax bill. And that's wrong. That's wrong.
Well, the state works on a levy system, right? So it's the total amount of assessed value and then divided by...
whichever the levies are.
Yes.
Yeah, however many levies you have.
So we keep hearing that, no, the levy rate is actually going down. But when the assessed value goes up, you're still paying that smaller levy rate, but at the higher amount. So technically you are paying higher taxes. So do you have an idea of, well, I guess it's too early to ask, what do you think the total assessed amount is for next year? But do you have an idea of how to fix the taxes? You said that you just wanted to altogether, but what are you focused on other than relieving people of taxes?
Okay.
And what's your plan?
I think the first thing is relief. I think we need relief in the grocery tax. I think we need relief in the gas tax. We need really, pardon me. I think we need relief in the income tax. And we did get some, by the way. And I think the special session that the governor convened, the one good out of that was the flat tax. I think the 5.8% tax, although it's a minimal reduction, the idea of moving to a flat tax is fantastic, and I think it's a great win for us, and I think we need to further that. So I'd like to see us reduce that flat tax even further. I think that was a great win.
Okay.
As for overall taxes, after relief, I think we need to reexamine the tax system and perhaps move to either all property taxes or all sales tax or all income tax and eliminate one or two of the others. Because remember, we brought in sales tax because we didn't have, or maybe perhaps it was the other way around, I forget my history, but we brought in sales tax because we didn't have an income tax, or we brought income tax in because we didn't have a sales tax, I forget which. And then we wound up with both.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we had the property tax as well. So we're not, you know, we're not being true to what we originally said we were going to do. Perhaps the way to do it is what the founders envisioned. And the founders, of course, you know, there's no income tax in the founding documents. There's no sales tax in the founding documents. There's none of that in the founding documents. All that existed were tariffs.
Yeah.
So they were their concept was to tax economic activity rather than the individual. And now we have moved to taxing the individual. Before the Civil War, the state never talked to the individual. Not the state, the federal government never talked to the individual. And then, of course, they went to conscription. And, you know, then we were talking about actually touching the individual from the federal government level. That never happened before. And then in 1913, we went to income tax where the federal government took money out of your wallet. So we survived for 150 or so years without an income tax. How did we do it? We built a fabulous country before then.
Yeah. I hear that the most is repeal the 16th and 17th Amendments.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes. Oh,
maybe followed by repeal the 19th.
Oh, my gosh. I'd love to see the 17th go away. Yeah,
the 16th and 17th. I would dance a happy dance if they were to go away. Yep. Wow.
Yeah.
You have a lot going on. Are you sure you're going to be able to survive?
And those are only two issues. That's two.
What else? What else do you have passion about?
Government overreach. I think we're and a lot of this actually ties back to the taxes that we're the federal and the state government touching us every single day of our lives, and we've got to do away with that. I think what the governor did was in shutting down over COVID was unconstitutional per the state constitution as well as the federal constitution. I think he should have been held accountable. Certainly there were efforts to do it by the legislature. Unfortunately, they failed. I'm hoping with a more conservative legislature this year, we can kind of rein in that activity.
Well,
that type of activity.
He vetoed the first couple of bills that got passed, you know, to rein in his power.
And the legislature did not override. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
We this also, you know, there is a constitutional amendment on the ballot this year, which is important, and that is the constitutional amendment that would allow the legislature to reconvene. On its own, without having to be called by the governor. If the legislature is going to assert its power, we need that back.
And that's going to be on the ballot this November.
Yes, it will be.
What's the title of it?
I can't recall the title.
I feel like it's like SJ 102. I don't know. I'm gonna have to look.
Well, it's the only one on the only constitutional amendment on the ballot.
Okay,
so that's remember it that way. But the legislature has to assert its authority. You know, the Constitution was written, the federal Constitution, which is an absolutely incredible document. when it defined the structure of the government, the first thing that it mentions is the legislature. That's Article 1, the legislature. Article 2 is the presidency, and Article 3 is the Supreme Court. There's a reason they put the legislature first, because the legislature is supposed to be the more dominant of the three powers, the three branches.
And they're the ones that write the laws.
They're the ones who write the laws. They're the one who spend the money.
There you go.
Decide on spending the money.
And the Senate says, okay, you can spend this money, basically. And then the executive just comes in and vetoes everything that they do.
Yeah, well, okay, depends. So. It depends on what kind of a relationship they have. Yes, that could happen. Man. That could happen.
Oh, I feel like we're going to have a fiery session in 23. It'll be fun from the cheap seats, which is where I'll
be. Yeah, well, I may be in the cheap seats as well, because as a first term, I don't think I'll be sitting in the front row.
Oh, yeah, no. Some people prefer the back anyway, so maybe maybe you can say that you just prefer the back.
It's easy to throw spitballs from the back. Yeah, yeah.
It makes us be able to see you clearer from the cheap seats.
Okay. That's true. That's true.
Okay, I'm afraid to ask this, but any other topics that you're going to be focused on?
Education.
Education. Should have known.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So I just saw that the candidates running for state superintendent, just said that, well, the Republican, quote-unquote, candidate said that she's against the Republican platform when it comes to education. Mm-hmm. That's kind of scary when I'm looking at different candidates to vote for a state superintendent. Any help for me? Any recommendation? Any recommendations? Are we just screwed? Idaho's just screwed, right?
No, I don't think so, because we will hopefully get an educational savings account done this year.
That would be so great.
I think we're very close. They were very close to getting it done last year. I believe it got through the House and failed the Senate. I think we certainly have a more conservative House this year, and we hopefully will have a more conservative Senate next year. And with the change of leadership, I think there's more chance that we're going to get that done. I think we'll see a lot of movement for education reform this year. Whether we have success or not, I don't know. But I think we're going to get some things done.
So I know Arizona just passed an education savings account. Are we looking towards them and how they wrote their bills?
We had a pretty good bill last year, mm-hmm. but I think we're going to measure it against what Arizona did and see if there's a key to success in what Arizona wrote.
That would be great.
Yes, yes.
I know as part of the homeschool community that I'm mm-hmm. now in, a lot of homeschool parents want to just stay away. Right. They want the government to stay away from them altogether.
Yes.
Idaho is one of the toughest homeschooling states that they allow the parents to homeschool the way that they want. Do you know if the educational savings account will allow homeschooling families to partake if they wanted to?
Yes. I believe the way the bill is written, if I jump in there on
you,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no.
Okay, I believe the way the bill is written is that you may opt out of it.
Okay.
So, and I understand that there was a lot of concern from the whole homeschool community over state control, so that if, you know, the example, which has been proven before, if you accept federal money, then you're therefore in control mm-hmm. or being controlled by regulations that the federal government could pass or write. Rather than pass, just enact them out of thin air. But I believe there's an opt-out measure.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it goes back and forth. A lot of people are excited about an ESA from a homeschool perspective, and others are going, absolutely not. Keep us away from anything you government types mm-hmm. have in store.
That's usually the best way to go, because the government has not proven itself to do things very well.
Oh, man. Well,
there are exceptions.
There are exceptions.
You know what? We've got great roads.
Yeah.
Idaho does a fabulous job on roads. It is just really, really well done.
Well, at least there's something.
And we
that
have
Idaho
a you know we have a great police force here.
That's very true.
Coeur d'Alene is fantastic. Yep. Our fire department. I mean, our what we control locally, we do a really good job of.
Yeah.
As you get further away from that point of contact, when you get further away from that individual, you start going up layers. That's where you run into trouble.
Yeah.
There's no accountability. That's what happens.
That's the problem. I did see that the Post Falls Highway District reduced their taxes by another 1%.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Isn't that great?
Oh, that is so great.
So wow. Finally.
See, it can be done.
It can be done.
Yes, yes, yes.
So he went last year. They reduced it by 1%. And then this upcoming budget is another 1%.
Oh, my gosh.
So I think we need to go check out what they're doing.
Yes, yes. And I've made this point several times before, but and I'm a student of history. I love history. And my favorite one of my favorite human beings of all time is Winston Churchill. Mm. And Winston Churchill was the Chancellor of the Exchequer in before World War I, and I want to say 1910, 12, something, somewhere along those lines. And Churchill reduced the cost of government. And he campaigned on that. He campaigned that I'm going to reduce the cost of government. And he went back to the voters and said, look, last year we spent 10 or 11 million pounds, and this year we only spent 9 million pounds. Isn't that great? Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could do that?
So how would Idaho do that?
How would Idaho do that? I don't know.
We don't know yet. Okay.
But I'm sure it's in there. I'm sure we're spending, what is it, $4 billion? There's got to be. And that's our money, not the federal money that's coming in, which is another $4 to $5 billion above that. There's got to be. We're buying the wrong staplers or something. I don't know, but
we'll have to dig in.
I will dig in.
No red staplers, just the standard black ones.
Exactly.
Okay,
yes.
Good
yes.
To know. Okay.
No USB driven staplers. Right. Or something. We don't need that.
Wow. So you have a lot going on. Hopefully, you are elected so that you can start the process of getting this stuff going, because I think that we're going to need a lot of help at the legislative level, and you're going to help us immensely, especially in District 4, which is my district. Mm-hmm. So I have an extra interest in what you are hoping to achieve down there. Where can people find you online?
Thank you for asking. Joe4Idaho.com, www.joe4idaho, and it's not number four, it's F-O-R.
It is F-O-R.
I am opposed to using numbers and replacement of words.
Joe4Idaho,
We could go on for a while about how we're destroying our language. But Joe4Idaho.com, there's a donation page there if you'd like to donate, or there's a volunteer page if you'd like to come in and volunteer to help, hand out literature or signs, canvas, knock on doors. And you'll see my position on some of the issues that we talked about today.
Can people contact you through that page too?
They can also contact me through that page, yes, yes.
So anything fun coming up in the next couple of weeks of your campaign?
Well, I will, yes, we have an event coming up later this month, and watch for information on it on Facebook and YouTube and other social media.
Is it all Joe for Idaho on there too?
It will be on there as well.
It will be on there.
Yeah.
Well, great. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for stopping in today and speaking with me and all of my ignorant questions about
not at all.
Stuff.
Oh, no. No, Erin, I love talking to you, and I thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
It's always great to have you, and I hope everything goes well in November. November 8th, get out and vote.
November 8th. Get out and vote.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
About the New York Times. Editors of the New York Times are meeting in there. Quite a bunch of clever fellas out here. All the news that's fit to print. Unless, of course, it's anti-communist. Hey, I'm talking the blues about the New York Times.
That was a great interview. I listened to it again, and we go into some deep topics, like I knew we were going to, but thank God Joe knows what I'm trying to say, because I'm slightly stupid when it comes to asking questions about taxes.
No, you did a great job. You did a great job.
Okay,
look,
thanks.
you're and I don't want to say just a mom, but you're a mom.
Oh yeah.
You're a mom, you got a busy life, you got a lot of things going on, you handle a lot of stuff about local things, and you're really, you're Johnny on the spot when it comes to so many other things that being able, so lucky for you to be able to sit there across from Joe and have follow-up questions and really talk about the issues. And man, he is so articulate, and he's so easy to understand.
Thank God, because he had to listen to me. So I'm so glad that I could understand him.
Yeah, it was really good, and he and I'm glad to see he's doing what he's doing out there, and I hope we get to talk to more candidates. Hope we get to talk to many different people out there. But that was a really tremendous interview. So, Congrats.
Oh, hey, thanks.
Hey, I noticed in between this this recording and the last recording that you may have watched a James Bond movie.
I finally did.
You did.
You gave me so much crap last time that I had to watch.
Was it crap or was it just like just genuine reaction of disappointment? Maybe
I gave myself crap for not watching it from your reactionary disappointment.
Now, that being said, you sent me a text of the screenshot of like which movie you were watching. And I just, of course, was overwhelmed with like, oh my God, this is going to be a disaster because she's going to be like, this was stupid or it was dated or whatever. And I don't know. We haven't talked about it yet. So I want to hear your genuine reaction to this. But so go ahead. Well, you have something.
I think it's funny that you said it was dated because I started with the 1969 James Bond movie that is your favorite, which is of His Majesty's Secret Service.
On Her Majesty's Secret Service. Yeah.
Yes. So I chose that one as my first one because you knew a lot about that one, and so we could actually talk about it.
Yeah.
I had some reactions. I was wondering why that one was your favorite. I didn't know if it was like the harem of women that were mind controlled to doing anything that you wanted them to do.
Bond plot point. Great James Bond plot point.
But I think we talked about that my only exposure to James Bond was the GoldenEye game on Nintendo 64.
Yeah. My phone is blowing up over here.
And so I think there was a part in the movie that I watched that is one of the levels in the GoldenEye show or game. That's what it is. Yeah, so it looked familiar. I think I remember playing this level and being.
And if you were an Austin Powers, did you watch all the Austin Powers movies? Yeah, you're going to see references
all over the place.
Yeah.
And I really liked that the villain was. What's the actor's name?
Telly Savalas.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. But I knew him from The Dirty Dozen.
Yes.
I didn't even watch Kojak. I mean, that was not a TV show that was on in our house growing up.
Yeah.
But all of the military movies were, so Dirty Dozen was on the top of the list.
Sure.
And so I'm like, oh, hey, I know that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great Bond villain.
It actually was really good. I didn't realize that the opening credits were all just silhouettes of women.
That's a thing. Almost every Bond film. Yeah.
Yeah.
Except up until the most recent ones, because I think they're going woke, so they want to be politically correct and not objectifying women and that sort of thing. But that's what James Bond was. He objectified women.
And I appreciated that about the opening.
Oh my goodness.
It was actually a really fun movie. I enjoyed it. I didn't realize it was almost 2.5 hours long.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. And even my son watched it for a little bit too and was entertained.
Okay. Well, the reason why I like this one so much, and this might be a little bit more of the modern day me talking here, is that this one was there was a genuine love story happening.
Yes.
Yeah. And most of the other Bond films don't have that. It's a real more casual relationship. Of course, in the Daniel Craig ones, they kind of revisited that sort of, relationship with Casino Royale and him falling in love and that sort of thing. But this one, Diana Rigg, fantastic.
Oh yeah,
fantastic.
She was hot.
Yeah, by the time that one ends, I'm just like, wow, that was like, it wasn't just a fun Bond movie. It had some meat to it.
Well, okay, there was one part that really got me, and I laughed, and I wrote this down, and I don't have my notes in front of me, which was probably a good thing. But he loved this lady, and then he went off undercover to this guy's mountaintop, estate, mm-hmm. and with this harem of women, and he was locked in his room, but he somehow got out to another woman's room, and they had a fun old time until she was going under her nightly mind control, whatever. And then he goes back to his room, and there's another chick there, and so they have a really fun time. And then they're going to do it again the next night. And then he's caught, right?
Yeah.
So, at that point, I was going, okay, Does he love that lady? Is she in the picture anymore? Is it just banging all these chicks in the harem?
Yeah, well, like you said, 1969.
I guess that's it.
James Bond. I mean, that's just what it is.
I know. We'll have to give him some leeway on that one. Yeah. And then I was weirded out by the end when he did, like, end up loving that chick. And spoiler alert, and they get married.
Right?
I was so confused. I'm like, whoa, that's not James Bond.
Yeah.
From what I understand.
Yeah, exactly. And it was interesting because at this point, George Lazenby took over as James Bond after, six or seven films of Sean Connery.
Yeah.
And so this was a big culture shock for a lot of people. And so they amped up the story and all that stuff to keep people like that. And then, of course, he didn't come back. And then they went with Roger Moore afterwards, who did even more films than Sean Connery did.
Oh.
But I'm happy that you started with this first one, because then you won't be distracted by watching all the other Bond films with all the other actors, because that's what your assignment is now, is to go watch all of James Bond movies, right?
It'll be happening.
and you get to watch it in the context of, like, okay, here's my first, quote, you know, old school James Bond movie with a James Bond that I'm never going to see again. So you won't get jarred by
that's a good point.
The distraction of a totally new James Bond. So he kind of sets the tone for you a little bit.
Good. That's good. I never thought of it that way. I don't know if anyone's into Harry Potter lore. I'm a Hufflepuff, and so I'm very loyal.
Yeah.
And so if I had watched six or seven films with Sean Connery, and then all of a sudden George Lazenby's there instead, I would have been like, wait, whoa.
Yeah, yeah. Wasn't that kind of what happened in Harry Potter? Didn't one of the actors die, and then someone else did?
Dumbledore died after the second film.
Right.
And then the actor they got is a great actor on his own, but he's totally the opposite of the actor who originally played Dumbledore.
Right.
So... I don't know. It took a little bit, but by the end of movie 8, you were fine.
You were fine.
You know, it was fine. Whatever. But same thing. It takes me a little bit of time.
Yeah.
But oh well. I think it was great. We'll have to watch the rest of the Harry. Here we go. Of the James Bond films.
Yeah. In the meantime, where can everybody find you?
Ooh. We can be found, I can be found on KC Spectator, everything, kcspectator.com, Facebook, I think Twitter these days, Telegram, most definitely, Gab, Getter, they're all KC Spectator. Truth Social, real KC Spectator, that's about it.
That's the truth.
Yep.
You can find me, Real Matt Edwards, Truth Social, Getter, and Facebook, and I'm glad we got to break down some James Bond after that cool, deep, heavy interview with Joe.
Oh, definitely.
Well done.
If I watch another one, I'll let you know.
Good.
We can discuss it.
All right. See you next time.
Bye.